lecture tonight is avoiding offenses to shoot a power plant. I'd like to start by reading from the power plant excerpt. Prabhupada repeatedly instructed that in a Krishna conscious marriage there is no divorce. This was based on the authority of Vedic injunctions, and he intended his disciples to strictly follow the rule. One time, however, Prabhupada received a written request by a disciple for permission to divorce his wife and marry another. In his reply, Srila Prabhupada somewhat reluctantly gave his permission. Prabhupada's servant at that time, was bewildered by Prabhupada's action in this case, and he waited for an opportunity to inquire. Prabhupada can do anything he wants, thought Kirti, but I can't understand why he would do this. Finally, in the evening, while massaging the Prabhupada's bed, Kirti asked him, Prabhupada, this devotee was asking about the divorce. Prabhupada replied that he had told him he could do it. Yes, I know, said Kirti, but I was wondering, you always say that divorce is against the Vedic society, there can never be any divorce. Prabhupada replied that in your society, these things are acceptable. Western society, said Shruti Kirti, they also accept meat eating and they accept intoxication. So why aren't any of these things allowed? Prabhupada then replied that whether he gave permission or not, the disciple in question was going to get a divorce. Prabhupada explained that if he had told his disciple no, the disciple had gone ahead and done it anyway. The offense would have been greater. Prabhupada said that he had given permission, but he knew the man was going to do it anyway.
This theme, at first glance, it might seem to be a negative thing that we discussed in appreciating Prabhupada. It is a negative, but we're talking about how to avoid. And since offenses are so destructive to spiritual life, it becomes an important subject matter. We're not going to indulge in it to ourselves, the offensive, but to consider what the offensive will be. Just like in the air, when you go up in the airplane, talk about the possibility of the plane may crash and something to read. Not a very pleasant thing to think about, but it may not be. It may happen, so you should move on. Besides, the Shastras are not silent about this. And as we've been doing, citing Shastra and then also seeing how Prabhupada personally dealt with things in his life, you can also review a little how Prabhupada dealt with what he considered offensive behavior for himself by his disciple. And it's an action that we can document that Prabhupada was doing. So hopefully we won't analyze this too much unnecessarily. We can start by understanding that the position of the pure devotee is inconceivable, so any kind of a fault finding or calculation like that, dealing with it, is done. Vaishnava Kriya Mudra Vigena Vichaya. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of Vaishnava. There's always a possibility for so-called gyanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of Vaishnava. Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of God in terms of his inconceivable activities. We recite not disobey the orders of spiritual master or think of him as an ordinary man. Because there's nothing extraordinary with finding fault or with criticizing a person just with ordinary dealings was just an objective thing. And the atmosphere nowadays is very heavy like that. There's not much respect. You see in what was considered normal news writing or news reporting is supposed the former centuries will be locked up by saying such things, but it's just come right out and smash the leaders and draw them in all kinds of caricatures and cartoons. So this is standard, so that somebody should be immune from that may seem a little extraordinary, but that's the spiritual standard. One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is representative of all demigods. Prabhupada says, a bona fide Acharya is none different from the personality of Godhead, and to envy him is to envy the personality of Godhead. It will produce an effect subversive to transcendental realization. Acharya is above criticism. A neophyte devotee should not consider himself to be on the same plane. One who maintains a material conception of the spiritual master is an ordinary human being. For him, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment, his Vedic studies, and knowledge are like breathing of an elephant. The Shastra also tells us about how to avoid this negative activity. Like in the Guru Vastakam, the last verse, get both sides of it. Yes, Shri Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada. If you please the spiritual master, you advance. If you don't, if you displease him, then you have your whereabouts is unknown. It's called the mad elephant defense. And there's a description in Nectar Devotion, which is so analytical about bhakti, how the different kinds of offenses will definitely destroy your devotional kripa. We lectured already on how to please Prabhupada. This is sort of the other side of it. We want to please him, that's positive. But at least if you're not constantly pleasing him in the most wonderful way, at least you shouldn't be doing the other. That anecdote that we read, Prabhupada spared that devotee from at least doing something very detrimental. So he wound up doing something that was pleasing. But we're just discussing this very bad area that we have to avoid at all costs, even if we can't do the most wonderful things to please. One should be very careful while associating with pure devotees to guard against committing offenses at their lotus feet. Transcendental attachment, either shadow or para, can be nullified by different degrees of offenses at the lotus feet of pure devotees. If the offense is very serious, then one's attachment becomes almost nil. And if the offense is not very serious, one's attachment becomes second class or third class. One way to, one recommendation, therefore, is don't get too close where you may commit these blunders, where there's more likelihood of offense, because familiarity breeds contempt. So you may know that there's a description about that. That both the deity and the spiritual master. This was brought up when Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, they went right in to stand beside Lord Jagannath, which was unusual. But usually Lord Chaitanya stayed at a great distance by the Garuda Stumbha in humility, way in the back of the temple, which is Darshan place. The deity of the Lord and the spiritual master should be seen from a distant place. This is called Mayada. I'm not sure if that's Sanskrit. Mayada. Otherwise, as it is said, Familiarity breeds contempt. Sometimes coming too near the deity or the spiritual master degrades the neophyte devotee. Personal servants to the deity and the spiritual master should therefore always be very careful, for negligence may overcome them in their duty. There are many different examples. I've gathered them. I don't need to go into them in detail. That you're well acquainted with it. Maybe just for helping us get the impression that these are fully discussed in the Shastra, I'll just mention one time Indra insulted Brihaspati and consequently was defeated, lost his power. Ramchandra Puri offended Madhavendra Puri and wound up the rest of his life being a blasphemer. Displeasure of his guru. A Brahmin offended Haridas Thakur in discussion and had leprosy. Amoga offended Lord Chaitanya, got cholera. A man offended Srivas Thakur, he also got a terrible disease. Sometimes even pure devotees commit offenses unintentionally, although we can consider it part of their lila. Mother Sachi offended Advaitacharya and got relief from it later. Shivananda Sain offended Advaita. Lord Chaitanya made a big instructional incident about it. Jagannanda Pandit was presumptuous towards Sanat Goswami. Those are special things. But when a disciple misbehaves, he loses the guru's mercy. By misbehave, I'm speaking of something a little different now. That is, general misbehavior and fall down is also kind of offensive behavior. It dishonors your relationship with the guru. Like Lord Krishna said to Arjuna, if you do this thing that you're contemplating, not fighting, you're known as a friend of mine. And it's better that you die than do this. So it was almost like Krishna was saying that he would be defamed if his best friend acted in a bad way. That's true. These servants of a person discredit the master when they misbehave. So even if you claim to be a loyalist, you know, you always appearing to be very... always glorify your spiritual master with your lips, but your misbehavior, then you're offensive. Of course, the connection is not always so direct. But you may misbehave, and it's not exactly an offense to the spiritual master. Like Krishna says, Api Chetsunaracharo, a person who has fallen down due to bad habits is still a devotee. But there can be a connection. Remember, there was one devotee who fell down a number of times. Prabhupada said, you have shamed me too many times before Krishna. So it can be a personal thing. Well, what to do then if we commit offenses? We should know that we should feel repentant. And based on genuine repentance, we should go to the spiritual master or the person we offended, the Vaishnava, and ask for forgiveness. Prayer that Prajapati Daksha offered to Lord Shiva after defending him in the Daksha Yajna. My dear Lord Shiva, I committed a great offense against you, but you are so kind that instead of withdrawing your mercy, you have done me a great favor by punishing me. You and Lord Vishnu never neglect even useless, unqualified brahmanas. Why then should you neglect me, who am engaged in performing sacrifices? So that direct asking of forgiveness was the only recourse also of Durvasa Muni after defending Ambarish. And even Lord Brahma had to ask the Lord for forgiveness. that is generally enough. We don't have to undergo some separate atonement or prayaschitta, but sincerely regret, ask forgiveness, and then engage in service once again to be rectified. So the case of the Guru Aparad, as Prabhupada perceived it toward himself, I think it's worth going over, summarizing, because one reason is when you hear the particular things that were considered offensive, then we get good examples of what was considered offensive. Not just that we're studying it historically without bearing the present situation. That's the main reason. And also, this is a personal appreciation of Prabhupada. It's always looking for an excuse to talk about Prabhupada's life and activities, even if it's just, not such a joyful thing, but a stern dose of hearing one displeasure by Prabhupada after another, and see how we can blunder, how to avoid this. So it's rather appropriate, although heavy. This is in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 4, the chapter is called The Threat to ISKCON. And I've just briefly outlined the points, again, assuming that you're familiar with it, and you can just hear one thing after another that was done. Some of them were small, but they began to accumulate. One day, one of the devotees who regularly cleaned Prabhupada's room put his picture upside down. When he came in the room, he saw that, noted it. Then, more seriously, all this was at the same time in Los Angeles, he went to take the person to take the charanamrita and had salt in it. So he made the remark there that if someone else should do this, get someone responsible. He was very serious about it. Then, more serious offense was the ISKCON Press published one of his books and left out his title as Founder Acharya. Due to wrong mentality. Around that time, Prabhupada seemed to begin to regard different mistakes, you could call them, as ominous. Mistakes, but usually there's some kind of neglectful mentality that goes along with it. So when the ISKCON Press sent him a book, printed a book and sent him his personal copy, he opened it and it fell apart. And the cover was cracked and fell apart. So that's a mistake that he took seriously. Then one day in the temple he asked, was anyone not chanting 16 rounds? One of the devotees honestly raised her hand, Nandrani, said she wasn't. I forget whether she said out loud or didn't, but the fact was, I think she said out loud that the leaders told her that she didn't have to, as long as she could get it work. So Prabhupada really that. Then a few of his disciples were in India, and they started associating with some persons who criticized Prabhupada, and apparently they just they started hearing some of this without making the proper response if you hear the spiritual master minimize. So they heard things that only Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati should call Prabhupada. And just like repeating these things as if the weather is it's sunny here, this is happening. And we met some people, and they say Prabhupada, about we shouldn't be called Prabhupada. And then his letters were coming back to America, and we were learning these things that actually Prabhupada's karma was thought to be this of me and that of me. And even the way they were starting to very enthusiastically read Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's books, Prabhupada was a little doubtful about it.
Then the word came from one of his kind of temple presidents in London that he had allowed a man to sit on the Vyasa San. Of course, in those days we had only one Vyasa San, Prabhupada, elevated seat. So on that seat, this man wasn't a devotee. He was teaching some Hindi or Sanskrit lesson. And so the temple president wrote and said, well, we did this, I feel real bad about this. I don't think it was right. Prabhupada, as we would say, damn right, it's not correct. What, how did you ever allow such a thing? Well, this is not good. Don't ever do this again. And Prabhupada, aside from incidental things, blunders which showed bad attitudes, in other words, one of his leading disciples wrote him a letter which Prabhupada thought was a little impertinent in his questioning. Were you always a pure devotee? What were you in your previous life? Why are you asking questions like this? In general, he saw that some of the big leaders, coast-to-coast managers, were really trying to take control of his movement in the big posts that they had been given. They were more interested in their managerial realm than in just a simple service to the Prabhupada. At least in some ways, he became incidental, but the real thing was their own management power and their dealings to increase that. So he began to notice that. For different reasons, at a San Francisco Rath Yatra, he was not allowed to sit on the cart. Someone else, one of his disciples, sat in his place. He asked the devotees that they form a GBC, so they had a preliminary meeting. And after their meeting, they went to Prabhupada and they said, we met and we've decided that one person should be the head. And I told you before. Decided otherwise that one person should be the head. Then he heard that his secretary, along with another leader, were taking liberty to withhold letters to him. Some letters they would give him and some they wouldn't. But he was very disturbed that his disciples didn't have access to him in that way. So in the midst of all this, he asked the three disciples from other distant places come to him because it was so, getting so intense there in Los Angeles, he wanted to get away. And then he wrote a letter explaining what was going on. Prabhupada's letter. As soon as he saw that his neophyte disciples were increasing in number, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati immediately decided to leave this world. To accept disciples means to take up the responsibility of absorbing the sinful reaction of the life of the disciples. At the present moment in our ISKCON campus, politics and diplomacy has entered. Some of my beloved students, on whom I counted very, very much, have been involved in this matter influenced by Maya. As such, there has been some activity which I consider as disrespectful. So we're not making this up that Prabhupada was responding this way. He's saying directly that he considers it disrespectful. So I've decided to retire and divert attention to book writing and nothing more. And then he writes another letter at that time. It is the injunction of the Vedas that the spiritual master should not be treated as ordinary man. Even sometimes the spiritual master behaves like ordinary man. So I'll not mention every single detail, but it continued, and some of the big managers, Prabhupada gave them sannyas to help purify them, simplify their lives. But they then had another turn.
which ended up in more offensive behavior where they took an impersonalistic attitude towards Prabhupada and developed Mayavadi philosophy. So this is certainly offensive toward Prabhupada. If we would develop any kind of a bogus philosophy, even in the name of appreciating it. In fact, one of the aspects of this concocted philosophy was that feeling guilty that they had offended Prabhupada, they tried to change by deciding, actually, we have not been appreciating Prabhupada. He's actually the supreme. He's Vishnu. And we've been treating him as an ordinary person. And not only we did this, but all the devotees have been minimizing him. Now we should understand that he's actually the supreme. Well, this is also offensive. This is the worst offense. We have to be intelligent about how to act and to act according to the shastras. I'll close that chapter, but even by talking about it, we can sort of see the black cloud of events that can gather, at least collectively or in a person's mind. Towards a faultless person like Srila Prabhupada. And if it happens, then it's a very troublesome situation for the person. I remember when I gave this class once before, one of the devotees said that actually I couldn't relate to what you were saying so much because I would never think of Prabhupada in any offensive way. So, a nice sentiment. But as I said, it's like with the airlines, we can talk about what may happen. So, and we'll discuss some subtle ways it can begin or happen. But that's a nice sentiment also, that this may have happened, but I would never want this. I would never let this happen to myself. I never think in such a way. That's why I said topic itself. To be in the syllabus, it's touchy, but I think it's proper. Then Prabhupada, when this thing was over, he said, regarding the poisonous effect in our society, it is a fact, and I know where from this poison tree has sprung and how it affected practically the whole society in a very dangerous form. But it does not matter. Prahlad Maharaj was administered poison, but it did not act. Similarly, Lord Krishna and the Pandavas were administered poison, and it did not act. I think in the same parampara system that the poison administered to our society will not act if some of our students are as good as Prahlad Maharaj. Therefore, given the administrative power of the governing body. Now, some subtle offenses. One is, if in any way you think you're better than the guru, and particularly Prabhupada, that's a fall down. That can take many different forms, that you may think you have a better education, or that you're in a more opulent nation, or you're young and he's old. You're better in this, you're better in that. Any kind of material thinking like that. Now, to put this in a positive approach, positive way to combat the negative thing, the offense, is to cultivate reverence. But we go daily to the Guru Puja rather than not go. We won't say necessarily that if you don't go, it's an offense. But if you go, you're cultivating the reverence, especially if you go not just mechanically, you go with the right attitude. When you serve the ISKCON movement, when you follow the rules, this makes you like solid and safe against this apparat. It doesn't happen to, just like a healthy person doesn't get sort of sick because it was good habits. There was an interesting exchange one year on the morning walk. I was there. Jai Dvaita Brahmachari was asking the questions about how Prabhupada sometimes appears to do something less than perfect. It was sort of a risky questioning. But Prabhupada gave some valuable instruction. So the devotee asked, sometimes from our material viewpoint we see some discrepancies. Just like we think that, Prabhupada says, because material viewpoint, the viewpoint is wrong, therefore you find discrepancies. Devotee, so we should think that we have the defect. Prabhupada, yes. Acharya is explained, bhakti samsana. One who's preaching the cult of devotional service, he's acharya. Then why should you find any discrepancy? Devotee, because we see, for instance, sometimes the acharya may seem to forget something or not to know something. So from our point of view, if someone has forgotten, that is, Prabhupada, no, no, no. And then the devotee finishes what he is saying. That is an imperfection. If somebody forgets something, that's an imperfection. No, no. That is not, then you have not understood. Acharya is not God, omniscient. He is servant of God. His business is to preach bhakti cult. That is acharya, devotee. And that is the perfection, Prabhupada. That is the perfection, Hare Krishna, devotee. So we have a misunderstanding about what perfection is, Prabhupada. Yes, perfection is here. How he is preaching the bhakti cult, that's all. So either these inconsequential things that he forgot, a verse, or he forgot something, or his not being God and knowing everything in the universe, these are not imperfections. So if we're trying to maintain such an unrealistic thing, and then in our mind you're saying, oh, I'm becoming offensive to Prabhupada. Well, you've got some wrong thing going on as to what he's supposed to do to be perfect. Just see him, how he's always engaged in serving Krishna and helping others to become Krishna conscious. We have the nectar of instruction verse that as the Ganges becomes muddy, it's still considered pure. So any bodily defects or other things, spiritual master should be disregarded. So, if after having the Shastric instructions about the position, we still have doubts, then like this exchange here, you can ask the spiritual master in a respectful way, like Arjuna asked Krishna. Krishna, you said that you spoke this science to the sun god, but you're my contemporary, the sun god lives thousands of years. That's a doubt. He was doubting Krishna's position. But it's not offensive, because you should ask those questions rather than keep them silent and then get a good answer. Narada Muni, Lord Brahma, you appear to be controlling everything in the universe. But I wonder if your attitude is supreme. Is there one higher than you? Lord Brahma was very glad to tell him the actual position. Maharaj Pariksit, he heard Sukhita Deva Goswami describing that the gopis, and he raised his doubt. He said, how could Krishna dance with other men's wives? This seems to be immoral. Sukadeva explained. Now, there's another way that an offensive attitude toward Srila Prabhupada may come up, and I call this a psychological defect. And that is, and if you have this and you discover what it is, it can be a relief to you. And that is, due to your own particular conditioning or due to your own hang-ups, you project something on Prabhupada. One example could be that you may have had real bad experience with your father and maybe with other authority figures. And then sometimes when Prabhupada is just acting like that, not like your experience, but when he's acting fatherly or emphasizing his authority, in your mind comes up or flashes this whole problem that you have. And then you project it on him. And then you see what you're doing, and then you feel real bad and you feel guilty that I'm being offensive. I'll give you another example of the way it can work is because of our own tendencies, we may have a human inclination to be attracted to certain things in Prabhupada, and because he has so many qualities, other qualities that he has, we don't relate to them as much. For example, we might relate more to Prabhupada being a scholar and being very gentle, and not be able to relate as much to his being like a general and being real forceful. And so when we see that one aspect, we think, oh, I can't relate to this. So you think, I can't relate to Prabhupada. He's too heavy, or he's like this. I don't. Whereas another person who may be in that chivalrous or Kshatriya spirit, when he sees Prabhupada like that, Chai, wow, what a leader, what a founder, Chai, this is great. And maybe other times he's fallen asleep, you know, when Prabhupada is being a Vaishnav scholar and speaking the Bhagavatam. And he's thinking, Prabhupada's books, why did he write these books? I can't get these books. So then he feels offensive. But you should know that these are defects. So this is like a little, a mini psychoanalysis of the disciple, which might be done in different ways, either by yourself or by consultation, to see that these things are there. Because we don't want to feel offensive. We don't want to be offensive. So actually, you're not being offensive. You're just confusing your limitations and imposing them on Prabhupada. He has every right to be different things that you don't normally appreciate. And you should learn to appreciate them, or at least learn to recognize that you don't appreciate that as much as something else, but it's not his fault. Now, one question that comes up sometimes is, okay, I'm dealing with my offensive activity, but what if another devotee, follower of Prabhupada, I see he's being offensive. How should I act? Well, the Shastras tell us the classical behavior is to give up your life or the other person's life, or go away or argue. So those are especially the two, go away or argue, should be done. For example, when Krishnas Kaviraj's brother blasphemed a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, Krishnas Kaviraj argued. And for arguing, he was favored by Lord Nityananda. So it's good that he did that. The killing example is given by Lord Balaram, and Ramaharshan offended him. Can't think of a going away example. That's there too. Oh, Lord Shiva walked away when he was being blasphemed at Jagya. One time Prabhupada tells that one of his godbrothers, or a couple of his godbrothers, they were actually criticizing Bhakti Sun Saraswati Thakur, saying, Guru Maharaj, the way he lectures is confusing. He speaks such a combination of languages. Sometimes he's Bengali, and then his English, and then Sanskrit. The way he does that is it's not good. Prabhupada said, don't speak like that. Guru Maharaj is perfect. So that's a good example of responding to what was going on. Prabhupada also said, those who criticize my spiritual master's chopping technique, they fell down. we can step forward, like Jiva Goswami steps forward and challenged that pandit, smashed him. The pandit got a piece of paper from Rupa Goswami that I have defeated you. So Jiva Goswami took to the defense of Rupa Goswami and defeated the other man very strongly. And then there was reaction by other Vaishnavas against Jiva. You're supposed to be humble Vaishnava, and you were Rupa Goswami. He just let it happen, and you made such a big thing out of it. But later, Jiva Goswami's position was upheld, that he did right. Aside from defending yourself in that way, you can try to help the other devotee who may do that, and help him to rectify. Like Krishna's Das, called Kaliya Krishna, who offended actually Lord Chaitanya by acting in nonsense ways when they traveled together. Lord Chaitanya had to save him from the Bhattataris. And then Lord Chaitanya came back to Jagannath Puri and said, just see the character of this man. I had to save him. This is what happened. Now he can do whatever he wants. I have no more responsibility for him. The man started to cry. Lord Chaitanya walked out of the room. So, although Lord Chaitanya showed him no compassion, the devotees, they did. He said, don't worry, we'll keep you in Lord's service. And then they contrived how he could go on the Lord's behalf to Bengal and tell the devotees that Lord Chaitanya had arrived at Jagannath Puri. So we should be kind to God brothers, even if they are in the unfortunate position of offending the spiritual master, if possible. So now we can go into some questions. I just wrote a concluding statement. A life dedicated to serving the mission and instructions of Prabhupada and his devotees will automatically free us of the mad elephant offense, but we should specifically protect ourselves and others. So I've got some questions, and then I'll ask you for some. When should offenses not even be discussed? Because, for example, it is said that if you hear blasphemy, it's considered a fault. If you just happen to be somewhere and you hear it, already you're in trouble. So, although we've been discussing offenses, when should they not even be... Is there a time when they shouldn't be discussed? What would be the condition?
If you hear blasphemy, and just by not ever mentioning it to anyone, it just died because there's no continuation of the discussion, then that would be a way of just but not mentioning it in the end.
That's a good point. I was making a slightly different question is, there a time, you did answer it directly, but what are some other answers? About this not even being a fit subject matter to get into.
You know, the other person is going to change their position. And like a preacher, you feel like a Christian or someone who is being blasphemous, but you know, and they won't change their position by arguing or discussing it. That would be fine. It shouldn't be discussed.
I would say also, anything that's done with indulgence, we sometimes talk about how a manager devotee could justifiably criticize other devotees and say, oh no, don't give him the car, he's not a good driver. You're criticizing him, but it has to be done. But when there's any indulgence unnecessarily in saying, you know, oh, he's not good at driving the car because he's a spaced out jerk, and you know, saying bad things against his character, then you're indulging in it. So we have, like the Lord Nrisimha says, we have demons within us. So they want to get out sometimes. And in the name of like talking about Prabhupada, even if we don't want to, we might indulge in things that shouldn't be discussed. Sometimes people raise questions. And we get it in the mail, or someone will ask a question. That's really disturbing, and it shouldn't be aired. Well, if Prabhupada such and such, how come he did this? and all of a sudden this doubt, this big doubt is in the air about Srila Prabhupada. It can be answered, but it was unnecessary to bring it out because somebody thought of it. I had something like that in mind also. Yes. Sometimes Krishna's so-called faults are brought up, and you can always explain those things, and it ends up being more glorification of Krishna's actual position. But that could be disturbing to some people here about Krishna's tricky behavior. Okay, go on to another one. What about assessing that some things Prabhupada introduced in ISKCON seem to be in need of change? Are there any examples of this? And how to spare Srila Prabhupada in inevitable criticisms of ISKCON? Some people don't do that. That could be offensive. Does anyone not know what we're talking about? Or can't think of anything? Someone like to mention an example. Okay, say something like someone says, "Boy, this Gurukul system, it is completely failure. It was really wrong to take the children away from the parents and do this and that." And it's just, they're just describing maybe what Prabhupada said we should do, and they're not careful about it. But to talk about honestly how something failed, that may be good. I was talking to someone the other day who had some real conviction about failures in ISKCON, but it was very refreshing that he completely, and he said it very nicely, how, no, he said, but what Prabhupada was doing was wonderful, but we messed it up.
Yeah. I was just thinking that it's really the burden on the disciple fulfill the instructions of Sri Krishna, prove that he's right, rather than because there was some, you were saying there's some shortcoming and that some of other spiritual masters, that the finger of blame should be pointed at the disciple. It's like, the distribution, the instructions are perfect.
Yeah.
It's just our lack of surrender and commitment to
build
them. And then it's actually our duty to make them. It's like the PTPT actually got the Nagaradi ground verse. You know, prior to Prabhupada, people in Sampradaya would see this as something just, particularly speaking, theoretical, that Vaishnavism could be spread in most intellectual countries. But Prabhupada didn't see it as theoretical. He proved that what Chaitanya was right. It was a prediction made and also instruction.
Yeah.
So that he brought it into reality.
There may also be, but this you have to do carefully, a way to explain what we would heard. That conversation before that Prabhupada says his perfection is that he's always completely preaching to serve, not that he's omniscient. So sometimes we may see that Prabhupada was experimenting with something. And it's not that our whole faith in him hinges on whether we have complete faith that thing was actually perfect, but it was an example of trying something, and then he himself withdrew it and changed it, but he's still perfect. But sometimes we have to, it helps us to admit those things, because they're within us, we're thinking, no, he did that so it's perfect, but it seems like it wasn't perfect. But
you've got to accept it, but I don't accept it. And so, you get some of these things out in confidential exchange, especially with someone who can help you. With faith in Prabhupada, you can get relieved.
Well, it seems like in major areas, you know, construction, there's more questions relativized.
Right.
But then that was something that I heard an analysis of one senior leader in the Niskan's Faldon, that he was a manager of Prabhupada and was here, and they had a difference of opinion, which I sometimes I think Prabhupada would entertain.
Yeah.
Get from the senior devotee, whose realization, which then practically implement something. And apparently, this devotee, like, differed. Hundred 80 degrees from Prabhupada's position. He never really surrendered to Prabhupada, even though Prabhupada insisted on his way. And then 6 to 8 years later, when this person fell down, someone who knew the intimate details of that whole transaction pointed his finger as this is the beginning of this devotee's loss of faith in Prabhupada, that he leading to the eventual outcome of devotional service. But it seems that's a whole area in the management realm where it's already across the line into offense or just taking the time to circumstance adjustment.
There's that remark, Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Chaitanya is talking with Ramananda Bharati, and they get to a debate, and then Sarvabhauma is supposed to judge the debate. One of the remarks is in arguments between the spiritual master and the disciple, the disciple is always, though the spiritual master is always victorious, so it's almost a kind of a, there shouldn't be too much intense disagreement. But then when they're arguing that the spiritual master should win, or how come he, how is he a spiritual master, or how is he a disciple? So it may have been fault that actually, when it really got down to it, the disciple couldn't accept it. Maintain serious disagreement.
That the disciple is concerned, and he has, he may have some good ideas about how to do his best. In other words, when the disciple can see that the guru is pleased, that should be his barometer.
There's also different kinds of relationships. It's like some like that spirit, and some are just completely submissive. Like Jagannanda Pandit, who tend to be in some quarrel with Lord Chaitanya, and get out her pandi, whatever you say, I accept. So it seems to be like that. For the mission, for the guru's mission, one disciple may be regularly saying,
"Then we should do this, we should do that."
Okay, so you know what to do. I've asked a few questions on this topic of offenses to Prabhupada. For group discussion. Now you raised some, you write one down too. The thing is that in some of these topics, devotees things we say can be applied, and in some cases there are differences. But also you have a direct relationship with Prabhupada, so we should be attentive to that point also. Question. I think in one of the lectures I deal with that more directly. Well, one interesting question here is, if a devotee has taken 12 years of Russian language and his spiritual master hasn't, is it offensive to think he knows more on the subject than his guru? No, but you just have to think that this is something for serving my guru. I know Russian language, or I know something. Like Prabhupada, he instructed one devotee to develop college preaching, and he said, you know how to do it better than I do, so go ahead and do it. So you're just a servant who has something that he can... It's actually to Prabhupada's credit that he has a disciple who knows 12 years of Russian. Prabhupada doesn't have to bother to learn Russian because his disciple can do anything that needs to be done. And you're just a disciple. But if you think, I'm a Russian scholar and he's not, and therefore he's less of a master for me. No, no. It's just something that you... The real thing is devotion to Krishna, and he has the most of that. He has what counts. You have some skills that you can use. So just do it very humbly and wonderfully, like the scientist devotees. They speak so much scientific language and education that Prabhupada didn't. But based on what he taught, faithful to him, like that, humbly.
Even if you have those 12 years of Russian, it's useless unless you're like, you translate like Bhagavad Gita, like a Prabhupada, like that.
Yeah, what is the benefit of that thing? A couple of questions in the December. How does one avoid offenses to the spiritual master, especially if he is harboring a doubt and doesn't know how to express it out of feelings of guilt or shame that he has some doubt? Well, you have to just go very humbly and submissively, even though the doubt is there, and express it. Although, even when you say it nicely, it still will contain some challenge or something that you don't want to bring up. If you really do it, you know, search your heart and do it, not to challenge, but because it's a burden on your heart, then it won't be offensive. Here's a nice example. When Lord Brahma created atrocious act of desiring to have sex with his daughter, his sons, they didn't like come in like gangbusters. You know, okay, Dad, you know, we got you. But very submissively, they prayed to him that we don't have any example of anything like this occurring before, and he was able to receive it and be touched. So I should always try to do like that. I've got too many here that I can deal with. If one feels that he may have made offenses to Prabhupada by speaking of and criticizing his character, instructions, or books, what can he do to resurrect this? Well, we said there's no atonement. A separate thing, but then you have to realize what you've been doing, and then really get into the flow of service to his devotees and his movement. And like that Amoga who criticized Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya blessed him to relieve it. And then Amoga started slapping his cheeks until they were swollen. Said, "With this mouth, I have offended you." But then they stopped him and said, you just, now don't commit these offenses anymore. But his spirit was good, that he was really sorry that he had, so we should, if we actually have criticized Prabhupada, his books and instructions, we say, oh, terrible, please forgive me. And then show it by, then if you've blasphemed his books, now serve his books and get close to his books. Whatever it was, like that, reverse it by practical action.
The antidote for offense is service.
Yeah.
Service precedes offense. Yeah. Mm. To that area, like you know, devotees, by always serving devotees, reality where it's not even certain, you know, it's like there won't even be the seed of defensive towards any real. It's always not even certain.
The more, it's like the, when the glass of milk is filled up and there can't be any dirt. Years, a number of ISKCON leaders have fallen. Many devotees felt that some of these leaders preempted Prabhupada's position. How can this possible offense be brought in the future? Another offense could be in the area of minimizing what Prabhupada emphasizes in his book distribution for even program. How great an offense is this? Well, individuals who may have preempted Prabhupada, they should learn their lesson, how dangerous it was. And then, as a society, then the devotees in general, even if some individual again does it, they should know enough that the whole movement doesn't get swept by this thing. We're intelligent, we do learn from our mistakes. Really run out of time to deal with these other two. So, if I didn't read your question, don't think you did it for nothing, because I saved them all and used them for future. Thank you.
He died.